When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So what are you fighting for?
Life. Death is the enemy. The first enemy and the last.
But we all die.
The enemy always wins. And we still need to fight him. That's all I know. You and I won't find much joy while we're here. But we can keep others alive. We can defend those who can't defend themselves.
I'm the shield that guards the realms of men.
Maybe we don't need to understand any more than that. Maybe that's enough.
Aye. Maybe that's enough.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Anwen.
And this is House Podcastica.
This week we're covering Season 7, Episode 6, Beyond the Wall, of our series rewatch.
Welcome, Anwen.
Thank you so much. So exciting to be back again.
I know. We had a little scheduling problem last week, but I think you were originally supposed to be on this, and then I said, let's switch it. And then I said, no. Just kidding. Let's switch back.
I'm flexible. It's all good.
Well, that was good. Well, we have to be flexible with our time difference, I guess, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever works.
So how is, just before we get started, how's New Zealand? How are you? How's your family? How's your country?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. We're doing okay. I think one of the things, I guess, that was as surprising to us was the response from all over the world for us about what happened. And, you know, this kind of stuff, if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about the recent terrorist attacks on the mosque in Christchurch. Christchurch is my hometown where I'm from, and it's about 4 hours drive north of where I live right now. And 50 people were killed in a terrorist attack there. And nothing like that has ever happened in New Zealand. And it's rocked everyone for sure. I guess one of the things about it, and I think people in the world have responded so amazingly to this, is how New Zealanders have responded. And without mentioning too much about the person that did this, because it's been a sort of unspoken and sometimes spoken promise, I guess, amongst New Zealanders to not talk about the person and to not give him any fame or attention. In fact, our Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has vowed never to say his name, which I think is awesome. So the one thing I wanted to say was he really fucked up, because he failed. He wanted this to incite violence and hate, and the amount of love I've seen in this country for everybody of every religion, every race, every background has been incredible. And people are reaching out to others from different religions, from different backgrounds, coming together, having vigils, donating money, bringing flowers, offering support of walking home safely from anywhere to anybody, all that sort of stuff, you know. He picked the wrong country to mess with. It's like, we don't roll like that, you know. In general, I know there's pockets of whatever, but in general, I think the response has been amazing, that we're not going to go there. We're just going to respond with love. So it's been really inspiring in that sense. But yeah, it definitely rocked us, because we're not used to that sort of stuff happening here, I guess. It's horrible that other people might be used to it, but for us, it's new. Yeah.
Out of this tragedy, I have actually very much enjoyed and been inspired by your country's reaction to it. And I think that it's a real testament to you as a person, because you are so full of positivity and love and life all the time since I've known you. And to see that that's what you practice, or like what you put out to us, just you, Anwen, is kind of what New Zealand is about. And that kind of like proved that you're not somebody different than where you come from. Like, you are who you come from. And I think that that's fantastic and wonderful. And I feel incredibly grateful and blessed to know you. And I just, my heart was with you guys and still is with you guys. But during those first days, oh my gosh, I was thrown for a loop as well, just because we feel like we have a real connection to your country as well, just because we know you.
Thank you. That moves me so much because, yeah, it's, well, I'm not an anomaly. We're all cool like me. Yeah. New Zealanders are full of awesome people, mostly. But, yeah, so thank you. Thank you so much. That's really, really means a lot. And the support of the Z-Head group and of just everybody in general to us, and me seeing, you know, people changing their Facebook profile photo to a picture of New Zealand or to a little picture of a Kiwi with a heart or something to show that people have never even been here were with us is really cool. It's really touching.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that that's wonderful.
Thank you.
So we are going to get down to business.
Awesome.
We are at the very end of this rewatch, and I really just, I can't even believe it. It's, we're at season 7, episode 6, Beyond the Wall. This is the penultimate episode of season 7, and it's the penultimate episode of our rewatch. Our rewatch is about to become a watch.
And yeah, I can't believe it.
I just can't even believe that we're here. It's so exciting. For those of you who may be just joining us as you gear up for the new season, we are a spoiler-filled podcast. At this point in our rewatch, there's really one episode that we would be spoiling you on, which is the next episode. So we do have the intention that you are coming to listen to our podcast, having seen everything from season 1, episode 1, Winter is Coming, to season 7, episode 7, the next episode, The Dragon and the Wolf. We do have a lot going on our Facebook page right now. I was sick all week with my son. He had the flu as well. So I spent a lot of time this week creating polls and just having some fun with making people choose. And I don't know if you saw any of it on the page, but I made people choose like who do you want to die, John or Danny? And you have to pick one. And who do you want to die, Sansa or Arya? And you have to choose one.
Oh no, that's too hard.
I know. A couple of people, like one person, I think it was Jeff Allen, who is a listener on here. He said, "I legit hate you right now."
That's awesome. Don't make me choose.
But you know, it's just a lot of fun just to kind of get us ready for the last season. So if you're into stuff like that and you want to just have fun or post pictures or whatever you want to do, you know, I get my energy off of the energy of everybody else, and the anticipation is just so awesome. And we have only like 2 weeks left, 15 days.
I just can't believe it, because I'm just thinking, you know, when we started the rewatch, I'm like, cool, well, there's 62 weeks till it starts again. That's time for it's time for one episode a week. I was like, that's years away. We can't even think about it. And now it's here. So it's amazing.
Oh, I'm so excited. So we are going to go right into the episode. And Anwen, as my, I kept wanting to call you Riley, and I don't know why. I don't know anybody. I know nobody named Riley. Anwen, my friend Anwen, who I love That's dearly. Would you like to go first with your top 5?
Sure. Okay, cool. So my number 5 for this episode is Landscapes and Locations. Oh, and cool. One of the things I love, the opening scene. So we see a really quick sort of ice to fire transition. And we've seen this before quite a lot, where we'll see the start of the episode, you know, it starts with fire and then ends with ice, or vice versa. And, you know, we've obviously learnt that fire and ice represents Danny and John. And so what I love about this episode is that at the start we see the camera coming along the map of, or the strategy table of Westeros, up to the top to where the wall is, and then we see the fire in the background, and then it quickly cuts to this amazing landscape of ice. And what I'm seeing with these recent episodes, as Danny and John have gotten to know each other and come closer together, that there's a lot of fire and ice merging. So it's not just fire in one end of the episode and ice on the other end of the episode. It's all intertwining. So we have here the flaming sword in the icy landscape. We've got the dragon fire amongst the ice and snow. We've got Benjen's mace amongst the ice. And then that opening shot at the very beginning with both of those elements represented. And I just love that. It sort of ramps up that tension that things are coming to a head and that they're merging their paths. And I think what we see, you know, at the end of this episode is that their paths are really merging and they're actually outwardly make that statement to each other. So that was really, really cool. And then the backdrop of Iceland I thought was amazing. You
so
know, you got
beautiful.
It's incredible. The characters are trudging through this landscape. And it reminded me a lot of Lord of the Rings. But, I mean, you know, everything reminds me of Lord of the Rings because it's me. But, you know, so you've got these incredible wide sweeping shots of amazing mountains and glaciers and rocky landscapes. And one of the things about that, not only does it look beautiful, but you always get the best out of actors when it's real. And one of the reasons that reminds me of Lord of the Rings is because when they shot part of Lord of the Rings there, I think we've spoken about it before, up at Edoras, which is where I was lucky enough to be an extra. It was the favourite location of just about all of the cast. And the thing that they all said was almost no acting required. Like, you're there in this landscape with this incredible 360-degree view around you that it feels real. So there's no, like, acting against a blue screen or feeling like, you know, you've got to imagine the mountains and the glaciers. It's right there. And I think that was really cool in this episode. And it looked really cold. Oh, my God. Apparently it got to 20 below when they were there. And the actor,
that's not even a temperature.
I know. I can't understand that. I'm like, so isn't zero like really cold? And then it just gets more cold. But apparently the actor who plays Tormund, he's from Norway, and he wanted everybody to keep warm, so he bought them all really nice merino thermal underwear from Norway to keep them warm while they were there. Aww. Isn't that the cutest? And all those wide-sweeping sort of travelling scenes were shot in Iceland, and then I read that they had to shoot the battle scenes in the studio because there were so many elements that they wouldn't have been able to control on location. So all of the costuming, all of the whites, all of the ice, the dealing with actual water and getting in the water, which is really hard to do when you're on actual location with, you know, almost freezing water. And so the contrast later on, they had to run tubes of cold water through their suits to actually cool them down because it was so hot under the lights of the studio. So they had these actors and these two extremes. It's pretty amazing. And then it's just seamless when it's on screen. So that was awesome. And then the other thing I loved about using that landscape and using that cold landscape, and you really get a sense of what it was like there. And one of the things I loved was when John falls in the water and then he gets out and he can't actually move or walk properly. And I love that because a lot of the time you see people in movies falling into icy water and then they just get out and they're fine. I mean, you know what it's like, even if it's slightly chilled water, your body freezes up a little bit and you can't move properly. Actual like ice water, you know, there's a sense of paralysis that kind of kicks in. And I love that they showed that. It was really realistic. It was like proper hypothermia when he came out and he was struggling to walk and lift his sword and everything. So that was great. I loved it.
Kit Harington is really, I think, an underappreciated actor. I think that we just expect him to be brilliant, or we expect him to be Jon Snow. And I think, like, when you listen to him, he changes his accent ever so slightly because he wanted it to mirror Sean Bean's accent. And he decided that that was going to be the northern accent, yeah. You know, and he's really skilled at swordplay, and he uses no stunt performers for stunts. In fact, for the Watchers on the Wall episode, I'm not sure if I talked about it, when he came out of the lift and he started fighting everybody right there, when they were editing the episode, I think it was one of the double D's, they said, hey, please don't quicken that, you know, let's put it back to normal speed because it doesn't look right. And they said, we've done nothing to this. Like, this is, this is his speed. And because of that, they've written in larger and larger battle scenes for him because he is so naturally skilled. They also said that during the battle that there was 9 minutes of almost no dialogue during that entire sequence, and they were really impressed by the way that Kit Harington was able to like convey everything he needed to just in facial expressions, which I thought was really very cool.
That's amazing. That's really cool. And you think about, he's not just conveying those facial expressions while he's standing still in a room talking to someone. Mm-hmm. He's doing that while he's trying to remember exactly where to go to be safe and how to hit his marks and which person he's supposed to hit or not hit with the sword and whether he's got his stunt sword or the real sword or, you know, there's so much mm-hmm. else to remember, and he's still able to do that. I agree. I think he's amazing. I can't wait to see what he does next, actually. It's going to be cool.
I love that, the fire and ice reference, because that opening shot of the war room map that they go along and then they go into the fire and then out it. I actually wrote that down. That was one of my favorite. It was wonderful. And I didn't put it together that that's what was happening until you said it, that they were doing the fire and the ice kind of merging together. And you could even argue that they were merging together in battle since they were going across the landscape the way that they were on the war room.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. I love it.
Great start, Anwen. So my number five actually is, well, I called it kind of like the walk and talk shenanigans, just because I think that you can make a top five out of all of these. So, you know, you had, and maybe you have some, but there's only two that I really want to focus in on. But you had Tormund and the Hound, Jorah and Jon, Beric and Jon, Tormund, Jon, and Gendry. And then you had Thoros, Beric, Sandor, and Gendry. I think you also had Jorah and Thoros talking about the past. So you just had all of these, like, these seven guys. I mean, with the exception of Thoros of Myr, these guys are kind of the superstar, rock star men of the realm. I mean, and they've come from everywhere. You've got Jorah, who's been in Essos for all that time, and Beric Dondarrion, who's been, you know, dying and coming back to life in another part of the realm. And you've got the Hound, who's been on his own special mission. And, you know, Jon and Tormund, who are just always wonderful together. One of my favorite parts of the walk and talk shenanigans is at the very beginning, where they're talking to Gendry about the fact that he's cold and, you know, what to do. And Tormund's just like, I feel like I can breathe again. Everything's great, you know? And Tormund's speech is just so rough and so off-putting for anybody that's not used to it. It reminded me of when Jon first met Tormund, and he was just like, and Tormund was talking about, like, you know, he liked to talk about fucking that bear all the time. Yeah. And it was fun to see Jon in the middle, where he just kept looking at Tormund and just kind of laughing it off, like, oh, my friend Tormund. And Gendry just looks almost offended by everything that Tormund is saying. I just thought that was lovely. But the two that I really wanted to talk about the most was Jon and Jorah and Jon and Beric Dondarrion. I thought that those two had the best moments of the whole walk up to on the White Hunt, I guess, mm-hmm. is what you call it. I love that Jon has so much honor in him that he probably couldn't stand to have that sword on him for as long as he did with Jorah around. And I think he picked a really good moment to pull him to the side after talking about his death, apologizing for not being there when his father died, and promising that his death was avenged. And then he tries to give the sword back, and Jorah just won't have it. And it was wonderful to get that, I think, for Jon to get that permission that it was okay for him to have that sword now. Because, you know, he has the Mormonts are on his side. Lyanna Mormont is in his home, basically. You know, now he has Jorah Mormont, and he has Jorah Mormont's sword on him. I just thought that the conversation that they had was really lovely. It was quiet. And anything that gives Jon more confidence in himself, to me, is just perfect.
Yeah.
And then Jon and Beric Dondarrion, I thought that they had the best scene, perhaps, in the entire episode. He said something very interesting in this, where he starts off and he says, you don't look like your father. I suppose you look like your mother. And I think for all of us, we were like, yeah, he looks like his mom because his mom is the Stark, you know? And Beric said something wonderful, where I think he was foreshadowing the end of this series. I don't know if you got that. when he said, "Death is the enemy, the first and the last. The enemy always wins, but we still have to fight him." And I think that that foreshadows the fact that they could very well lose. What do you think about that?
Yeah, because you can see it from a really local perspective of he knows now, you know, for sure that he's going to die. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know, John has died and come back, but that the enemy, death, always wins. We still have to fight him. And that's kind of, that could be taken to mean just them. And, you know, we're all doing that every day, aren't we? It's like every day that you struggle to live is mm-hmm. a day that you're fighting death. We're all doing it. Or you can look at it big picture, like they know this big battle's coming. There's a huge risk that's going to be taken. They don't know if they're going to come out on top, but you've still always got to try. So there's so many mm-hmm. meanings to it. I love that scene too. Yeah, and he's got such a great voice. The way he delivers things is just, I could listen to his voice all day.
I'd love it if he could narrate my life, you know? Kristen got out of bed this morning. She didn't know what was ahead of her, but she knew that she had to face it.
There was no milk in the refrigerator. Kristen went out and got some milk. You'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I got that milk. It was amazing. But I just thought it was especially interesting because this whole upcoming war is ultimately about death versus life. And so if death always wins, but they still have to fight it anyways, I'm wondering if that means that there is no win in this upcoming war. I don't know. I'm real nervous about this war.
In a show where no character is safe along the journey, there's absolutely no guarantee that there's going to be a happy ending, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. I mean, Ramsay Bolton said it best, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what you think about this. When Tormund and Jon are talking about Daenerys and bending the knee and getting the alliances together, Tormund says that it says, he said, how many people died for his pride? Meaning that Mance wouldn't bend the knee to Stannis to let the wildlings cross the wall. And this line has been said basically the same way. This specific line has been said different ways over the course of this series. Jon said it to Mance, trying to convince him to bend the knee. Daenerys said it to Jon, convincing him to try and bend the knee in the cave. Tormund says it, but he doesn't say it to John. It's almost like he's just saying it as he's thinking out loud. Like he's almost angry with Mance that we're all here. We're all here at this point. We could have had more people. He knew what was coming. We all knew what was coming. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices and just sacrifice your pride. And everybody will eventually get over it once they realize why you did what you did. I feel like that was the last piece that John needed to finally bend the knee at the end and say, fine, whatever. If that's what you need, you're my queen.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think so. I definitely agree. And when he's hearing it from someone like Tormund, who I kind of come to see Tormund as the kind of battle version of Varys in a way, because you see him being loyal, and it's not that he's necessarily shifting allegiances, but mm-hmm. it's that he's doing what he knows is right for everybody. So he does it with a sword or a battle axe or whatever, and Varys does it with loyalty and talking and scheming and so on. But I think Tormund is, he's loyal and true to whoever he's with at that time, and that doesn't mean that he flips. I just mean that, you know, he's found himself on this path, and he'll do everything he can to be fierce and loyal to the people that he's with. And I think maybe John sees that in him and thinks, well, if this guy who's so fierce, so loyal, such an amazing warrior, he's guileless. He doesn't have any crap about him, Tormund. He's just what you get is what you see, you know? And mm-hmm. when John sees him say something like that, a big picture statement, like, you know, how many people had to die for him to do that. And he's not trying to, like you say, he's not trying to convince him. He's not asking John the question. He's just stating it as a fact and putting it out there. And it's, you know, John comes to that conclusion himself, obviously, by the end of the episode. And I think it has much more weight to it than if somebody just said, hey, come on, you need to do this so that all these people don't die. I think it was more of him actually having to think of that himself, which was really great. You know, Tormund seemed like a bit of an oaf at the beginning, and you know, there's so much more to him now, which is really great.
I don't even think that Tormund knows that he has layers either.
No, I don't think so either.
I think he's just like, you know what, I like to kill people, I like to have sex.
Yeah.
That's about it.
That's brilliant.
What was your number four?
Well, it's awesome because it was the same conversations between them all. So I've got a couple of extra bits to talk about there. First of all, the actual mechanics of walking along and talking to each other. I loved that as a way to show lots of different little snippets of conversations. One of the things I thought was quite interesting about that was, I know it's a little bit of a stereotype, but in general, I think in real life, in our world, women often do just sit around and chat. They just hang out and they just chat. Whereas a lot of the time men, I think, hang out and they do things together. They do stuff side by side, like exercising or playing sport or games or fixing something up or building something or, I don't know, Lego or gaming or just anything. But they do stuff and that's how they hang out and they talk while they're doing that. And that's one of the reasons I love this, because it's these guys, they're on this mission, they're walking from A to B, but it's a great way to provide a lot of, you know, opportunity for interactions between different ones. And it's like, it's for real. If you're walking along, you know, you don't always walk at the same pace. Someone might stop and you might talk to somebody different. And so they'll have an opportunity to talk to each other, which was a great way of seeing these different interactions between them.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the interactions, it was a good balance because some of them were really funny. You've got everybody hassling poor Gendry and, you know, Tormund jokes about keeping him warm and then Sandor tells him off for whinging. I love that line. He says, your lips are moving and you're complaining about something. That's whinging. And then poor old Gendry, Tormund, they finally get to where they're going. Tormund takes his hammer off him and makes him run all the way back.
It's like, give me your hammer.
It's like, oh, and he's going to run. Luckily, though, he can handle the cardio because he's of all that rowing, you know, he's pretty fit.
Well, the marathon portion of the Westeros Olympics.
Yeah, he's done the rowing. Yeah, he's done the marathon. Poor old Gendry. And yeah, some of the conversations are serious. You know, we talked about Beric already, and I had that down too, that line, death is the enemy, the first enemy and the last. I just thought it was amazing. And my other main point was the same as yours, Jorah and John. And one of the things I liked about that was Jorah took Longclaw when John handed it to him, like actually took it and thought about it and looked at it and everything and does a sort of speech about it. And then he gave it back. And I think that's much more meaningful than just saying no, it's yours. He took it and he considered it and it just seemed to have more weight to it that he was actually giving it and presenting it back to him. And then on my second watch, I picked up a deeper meaning that I didn't get the first two times I saw it, but this last time I watched it, when he says, may it serve you well, you and your children, and he gives it to him and he gives him this long look, I thought he's giving his blessing to John and Danny. Like he's realised that he's in love with Danny. He's realised that he's not going to be with her, but that he's saying that John's worthy and that he's giving it to him and saying, may it bless your children. And I just went, ooh, and I got a bit of a shiver when I saw that because there's a lot more meaning to that look, I think, than just, you know, here you go, here's your sword back.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, if you didn't pick it up, everybody, watch it again, that scene, and just think about that, think about Jorah relinquishing that last bit of hope that he and Danny might be together when you're sort of watching that scene, and it does put a bit of different spin on it. So I loved that. I loved that scene with them. They took their time with it. It was really slow and meaningful.
That's funny because my number four was actually references to the future. The first and foremost was Jorah to Jon giving him Longclaw for his children. And what I loved about it was that we had Jon and Daenerys both during this episode being told that they have to secure a future.
Yes.
That Jorah said, you need to keep this for you and for your children that comes after this. And then you have Tyrion telling Daenerys, you need to choose a successor. We need to, you say that the dragons are your children. Okay, that's fine. Once you win this, what happens after this, you know? And as angry as Daenerys is to hear that, it's a valid question. I'm not really sure why he chose now to bring it up. But whatever. And then at the very end, Daenerys says to Jon, very emphatically, that her dragons are her only children. They're the only children that she'll ever have. And she says that to him quite a few times. And in the next episode, what I really enjoy when she says that to John, and John's like, who told you this? Like, why is it that you believe this? And that's something for next week. I love it that they're already planting the seeds for the future. So yeah, I picked up on the reference to John and his future in Longclaw as maybe a house. And who knows? I'm not sure that he would even be a furtherment of House Stark. I don't know what house he belongs to. You know, I didn't see it as Jorah giving him his blessing, giving John his blessing to go and be with Daenerys. And because at first I thought, oh, well, maybe that's it. But then I thought, Jorah knows that she can't have kids. So is he saying, ha ha, you know, you better go find another woman.
Yeah, you could see it like that.
But I like the way that you're thinking of it because it's positive.
Yeah, woohoo. Well, it's kind of, I was trying to think back to, okay, how much has Jorah picked up on what's going on between Danny and John? And then I thought, well, any time he's been in the room, he would have picked everything up. If you're in love with someone, you're watching them, you know what they're feeling, you know how other people are looking at them. You notice everything around them and everything that's happening with them. So he would have picked up that even more easily than Tyrion picked it up. Tyrion talks about it as well. So I think it's really clear that he knows. And yeah, I think he's passing it on. And I don't know how much anyone really believes about whether she can have kids or not. It's, you know, one person who told her that. And
she really believes it, that's for sure. So what was your number three?
We've touched on it a little, but it's Tormund. I wanted to give him a whole number for himself because I just love him so much. he's so funny. And we spoke before about how, you know, I love that he's just not this one-dimensional oaf. You know, at the beginning, he seems that way because of how he comes across. But he's got these funny lines, but he's also really heroic and down to earth as well. There's just no nonsense about him. He just says it how it is. And when he's talking to Sandor and he says, "Ginger's up, beautiful, we're kissed by fire." That's so cute. And then he says he wants to make giant monster babies with Brienne. And that look of disgust on Sandor's face when he realizes that he's talking about the woman who almost killed him, left him for dead. Yeah. "You're with Brienne, a fucking Tarth." And that look of excitement on Tormund's face, like, you know that feeling, eh, when you get to talk about the person that you're crushing on? It's like, ooh, ooh, yeah. Ooh, you know who I'm talking about. Let's talk about my girl. I'm not with her yet, but I've seen the way she looks at me. And it just reminded me of that gif that's going around with him smiling at her and she's rolling her eyes in disgust. It's so awesome. I could watch that 100 times.
Him eating the chicken.
Yeah, it's just so cool. And, yeah, I love that. You know, he's funny, but you know, he's serious when it counts. And at the end there, when they're all getting ready to get on the boat and he shares that look of understanding and respect with Sandor after everything they've been through together. Yeah, he just seems a lot more well-rounded than he was initially when we first met him. And I love that about him. I just think he's really cool. I'd like to see that actor in other stuff. I don't think I've seen him in anything else.
He was in one of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Oh, okay. I have to catch up.
I've only seen like maybe two of them. But yeah. I think he was in either like the 7th or the 8th or one of them. I don't know. But it'll be on his IMDb. When he started being the spokesman for like hotels.com or something. Do you remember that? I don't know if that came out where you are. But here in the States, he was the spokesperson for some hotel chain. I forget. It wasn't a very expensive hotel chain, but it was just weird to see him in a suit and his hair like all coiffed and he's all being all goofy and everything.
That's cool. You're just used to seeing him dressed up in skins and furs and ice in his beard and everything.
Yeah, exactly. I love Tormund. I love the look that he gave when Sandor walked away from him. And he knew that he had gotten under his skin and he just gave this look like, ooh, I like this guy. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, he knows when he's riling people up and he really enjoys it. That's funny. Mm-hmm.
There was a point in this episode where I thought we had lost him.
Yeah, and it went on. And I thought, yeah, oh no, it's over because I kept showing him. And oh, yeah, that was horrible.
when they start pulling him into the lake, I just, that was it.
Yeah.
Especially since he's such a big character and such a central character now that if he was going to die, it would have been that long of a death.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? How you have expectations based on, you know, how they've shown something before, how much time they give you. I mean, it's like The Walking Dead, isn't it? We talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, they can't die because they haven't had any screen time this week. Oh, look, they've had lots of screen time. They're going to die. And it's kind of true with this show too. But also that fact that there are so many main characters, they're all there. It's a huge battle that's going on. How could none of them die? Like it's inconceivable that none of them would, you know, apart mm-hmm. from the obvious one that we lost. But again, you kind of think, well, there's seven of them. There can't just be one of them that dies. It's like, if it's going to be someone, it's going to be him. And, oh, it was so good. It was proper relief when they saved him.
Yeah, when the Hound came through and saved him and pulled him right out, I'm like, oh, thank God.
He's got to make those giant babies.
Anything else for your number three?
No, that's it.
My number three, I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about Arya and Sansa.
My number two.
Oh, cool. Okay, awesome. So we could tag team this.
Yeah.
I know I've said this a few times, but I feel like we kind of got confirmation that this whole rift and fight between them is all for show. Because at the very end of their scene together, when Sansa finds the faces, and I loved it when she pulled out Walder Frey's face. That was awesome. And Arya finds Sansa and they have that big confrontation in her bedroom. At the end of it, she takes the cutthroat, she takes the cat's paw, and she flips it and she hands it to Sansa. And I feel like that was a hint for the audience that they are aware of Littlefinger, because that was his blade. That is the blade that's going to bring everything together in the next episode. And I think that her giving it to her, because Arya had it again, you know, we should have known when she walked into the next episode, when she walks into the big meeting hall, whatever it's called, the great room or whatever, she had the cat's paw. It was back in her sheath. I mean, even without knowing that, I would take her handing that knife over to Sansa before she leaves her own bedroom as a hint that this is all for show. We are acknowledging that Littlefinger is probably listening, or somebody he knows is listening, and that handoff was our clue. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I watched so closely in all their scenes together, because watching the previous episode and then that they're in, and then this one and then the last one, trying to figure out at which point they do start to collude. And that was one of my questions for you, you know, when does that happen? And it's not really obvious, which I love, because it shouldn't be, because they're trying to trick him as well, which is great. And that first scene where you see them talking about when Arya was learning how to do archery, and, you know, Ned was looking down at her and everything. And then they she confronts her about the letter that she's found, or that Littlefinger's planted for her to find. And you don't see him doing that old classic Littlefinger lurk and smirk kind of in the background, but you kind of get the feeling that you'd know he was there, even though you don't see him. And I like that.
Yes, totally.
It gives us credit as an audience. We don't have to see him going, wah-ha-ha, in the background, because you know that's just what he does. He's always around. And, you know, you get that sisterly bickering between them, and it's sort of starts off, it's a little bit teen angsty, like, oh, no, I had it worse. No, I had it worse. I can't imagine that. No, I can imagine. And I think some of that was probably for the characters quite natural as slipping back into their old habits of how they used to interact. And it might have used to have been about really trivial things, and now it's about really big things. But, yeah, I think I love that they keep us guessing a little bit. It's not really crystal clear. And I love that even when you've watched it a few times, sometimes I'll go back to that scene and go, hang on, Sansa does look really worried. She looks really scared, and she's right to worry about the Lords, you know, finding out about that. It doesn't look good for her, does it, that she wrote that letter?
Yeah.
It sort of looks like Sansa's beginning to be really afraid of her, but also I think, you know, she's starting to really understand and respect her as well. And I guess the first time when I saw it, I thought that I felt really uncomfortable seeing Arya being that menacing, because I actually wondered, has she actually gone really bad? Has she actually just like flipped over and she's just gone full assassin and she's not going to be loyal to her family? The acting's so good, and it's sort of acting within acting, isn't it? Because they're kind of putting on a show for what's going on there. And I love that.
Oh, like the play within a play at Bravos.
Yeah. So they're sort of like, you know, she's has to be the certain way, but also she's doing it because if they know that Littlefinger's listening, they have to put on a good show because they have to trick him. You know, tricking a trickster is even harder. So they have to really make it good. And that's why I like that we don't see if he's there or not, because we're not sure. In the end, after the, you know, that when, as soon as she flips that knife around him and you see that she's, you know, not going to get all stabby with Sansa, I love it because you can see how this new badassery of hers is just going to translate to being around her family. And of course she's loyal to them. So we've seen how badass she can be. And now we're like, cool, she's back where she wants to be. And she's going to be here with her family. And then obviously it'll pans out in the next episode. But I love how it's hard to gauge. You can't quite get it. And I think people watching the first time, and I know when I watched the first time going, what is going on? And I love that because the feeling's still there, even on the rewatch. But shows that it's a really good act.
Yeah, you know, even after all the rewatches, you're still trying to figure out when exactly it happened.
Yeah.
You're still sitting there going, okay, so I've seen this a million times. I know exactly what the outcome of this, and I can't figure out when this actually becomes a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
And it's confusing too, because it's kind of Sansa sends Brienne away and you're like, well, is that part of the act too? Or like, is she doing that to kind of, I guess, speed up things with Littlefinger, like to make things go a little bit faster or to kind of spur him into whatever his game is? Because in that conversation, I feel a little bit like looking back, that conversation that she's having with Littlefinger in this episode, she's starting to understand what he's all about and she's starting to test what he's saying. And then in the next episode, you know, there's a much bigger test of what he says when he's really digging in deep about Arya. But yeah, going back and looking at it again is fascinating. I think I could watch those scenes 10 times and still not be quite sure. And that's great. That's a really good storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's also, I mean, it's not a part of Arya and Sansa specifically, but it is an offshoot of it. Why do you think Sansa sent Brienne away?
That's really tough. When she first did it, I just thought, what are you doing? Like, what is that about? I don't know whether she actually did just want to have someone like legitimately answer the call to King's Landing and actually send someone and have a representative down there. I don't think that's the case, because I don't think she would care at this point. They're doing their own thing in the north, and I don't think that's probably a factor.
I'd send Lyanna Mormont.
Yeah. Imagine her taking on Cersei. That'd be awesome.
It would be
amazing. I want to see that conversation. You know, like as much as some of the other characters, very few of the other characters managed to dress Cersei down. I think she'd just do such an amazing job with that. It'd be really cool.
Cersei wouldn't know what to do, because she would be like, you're a child. You don't, what do you know?
Yeah. And then she'd just slam her. It'd be awesome. No, I don't know. Maybe it is that she wants to just really speed up Littlefinger's game, that she just wants to go, okay, let's see what he's actually about here. And maybe she does feel safe enough there with her protectors and her lords and things. But you do see her kind of second guess herself when Brienne says to her, you know, how loyal are they? Has Littlefinger already got in their ear? And she starts to think, oh, actually, maybe that's the case. What do you think? Why do you think she sends her?
Well, I didn't until you just said something a minute ago. What if that was another indication that she felt perfectly safe with Arya there?
Yeah. Yeah, you that know? Could be it. So she's already made that decision. She knows Arya's got her back. She's already seen how much of an amazing fighter she is. Yeah, she doesn't need Brienne as well.
Maybe it was just, hey, you know, you're really good with Jaime, he's one of your best friends. Go down and represent my interests. And maybe that was another way of telling the audience that Sansa's not nervous at all around her sister at all.
Yeah.
She's, you know, she's so not nervous and so confident that she's sending Brienne away and Podrick. If we ever get the chance to ask anybody, let's ask them.
Yeah, for sure.
Too bad none of them are at Walker Stalker this weekend.
That would be cool.
So that was your number two, though? Did you have anything else about that?
No, that was it. I love seeing both of them together. And, you know, from that first moment where they reunite, I just think it's been so well represented. And, you know, it was a while back, but they're reuniting there, and they just, the way they see each other and hug immediately, but then later, of course, you know, all the little sisterly things come back. I think it's a really well represented relationship between the two of them, how much they've both changed in the years that they've since they've seen each other. It's really cool. I don't want to pick one of them to die, Kristen.
We'll pick one.
Sansa.
Sansa?
Oh my God, that was so quick. Sorry, Sansa.
You're like, it's so hard. I can't, Sansa. My number two is just, it's short, it's little, because I'm not sure how much of it I can talk about, but it was, we lost three characters that have been with us since season one. This episode, we lost Thoros of Myr, Benjen Stark, and Viserion.
Oh.
And all of that makes me real sad.
Yeah, it was such a hard episode to watch, and even harder, I think, to rewatch, because you know that's coming, hey?
Talking about Benjen, Benjen Stark puts Jon on his horse, and they have an entire conversation about how there's no time for Benjen to get on the horse. They say a long, drawn-out goodbye. Jon rides off into the distance, and still Benjen's waiting to be attacked by whites. Let me tell you something. There was time. There was scads of time.
There was time if they had gone at a really gentle trot, let alone cantering or galloping off on their horse. They both could have gone on. It's a big horse. They both could have got on. They both could have gone, like, you know, a steady pace that could have been, the horse could have managed for a while, and those hordes would not have been able to catch them or keep up. But it made a good story. I guess it's one of those things you have to just go, yeah. I also was the same. I was like, no, this can't be real. He just showed back up. He's been gone for ages. He just shows back up. And then, no.
John's like, Uncle Benjen? Uncle, what? What is happening? Like, But the best part was we were watching it last night. Dave and I were watching it last night. And John gets on the horse. He goes, come on. And he goes, there's no time. Sure, there's time. You know, ride for Castle Black, blah, blah, blah. Yada, blah, blah, blah. And Dave is just like, they're still talking. Get on the horse.
It's like in Austin Powers where the steamroller's coming really, really slowly. And the guy goes, no. And the steamroller's still coming really, really slowly. No. Like, there's still time.
Like, there's a lot of time. There's a lot of room on that door there, Rose. Get Jack on the door.
Exactly.
Plenty so of room funny. For two people on the horse on the door, okay? Let's just call a spade a spade here.
And also in those situations, like, try. Just don't say there isn't time or there isn't room. Just try it.
Yeah, if there's really truly no time and you got to lose some weight, then Benjen can jump off the horse and save John. But, you know, maybe everybody should just try.
Oh, dear. It was very heroic.
It was. You know what? And he got a good death. He got a good final death, I guess, because he was already kind of dead.
Yeah, he was already getting a little bit crusty on the face.
Yeah, and then, you know, we lost Viserion. Is that your number one, is Viserion?
Yeah.
Then please take it off my hands.
Okay, I will. Okay. I don't have very much written down because it's just, okay. What can you say? Yeah. I just put Viserion OMG. You know, just that, it's just so chilling, the whole thing is that calculated slow way that the Night King moves, and he sort of figures what he's going to do. He looks, he goes, yep, and he just kind of goes over, he grabs the spear from his minion and just aims and fires. And the thing that was so heartbreaking about it was so different from that time that Drogon got that little scratch from the arrow in the loot train. You know, he kind of got a little bit injured, but it wasn't such a big deal. And this one, it just goes in, there's this fiery explosion, and then there's just torrents and rivers of blood coming out of this dragon. And you just know, like, there's just no kind of, oh, I hope he's okay. It's just, you don't bleed like that and survive. And he just goes down. It's really quick once he gets wounded. He goes down and you just know he's a goner, and that disbelief on Danny's face. And just like, then you it sort of pans across to all the other characters. They're all looking in horror, and you see Jorah looking at Danny and how she's looking. And you just, oh, it's horrible. And then he just goes limp and slides into the water. And then that final moment at the very, very end of the episode when he opens his eye and it's blue, and you just, oh, it stopped my heart just thinking it's not only that this amazing creature has been taken, but that he's been turned into a bad guy. It's horrible. Ugh.
I didn't want to believe that he was dead. I didn't want to believe that he was dead. It wasn't until he sank into the water that I realized he was gone.
Yeah. And it just sank so finally. It wasn't just sort of like, oh, I'm slipping, I think I'm going to try and get out. It was just, that was it. Yeah.
And yeah, and when his head just went in at that final moment, yeah. I just, wow. I still, you know, I don't watch this episode a lot. I can't. You know, I love the whole episode up until that moment, but it's because of this moment, I just can't watch this episode. It just, it's like, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
And I think it was Tormund's face that I think was the worst, because I don't think Tormund had seen a dragon yet. And I don't think any of them had, except for Jon, Gendry, and Jorah.
And to see them like that, for the first time in action and doing what they can do, and
they're on a dragon.
Yeah, yeah. They're on a dragon about to fly away, watching another dragon. And yeah, just complete disbelief. Just like Tormund's face, yeah, it's just wide eyed horror and shock. Just can't believe it. And yeah, it was such a powerful scene. And that tense moment where you see that Jon sees the Night King going for the spear again, and he's just, go, fly, it doesn't matter, I don't matter, nothing else matters, you've got to get out of here, because he knew what was coming. And he's a pretty good shot, so they really had to get out, and then Drogon does a little swerve, which was perfect. But yeah, and I just, you kind of think ahead to what's going to happen in the final season when they're encountering him on the other team, you know, like, what's that going to be like for Danny, and how are they going to deal with it? And will they have to take him out? And then what happens? And oh, it's a whole different element to the story, isn't it?
It's funny. I didn't realize that that was how the Night's King planned on getting an ice dragon. You know, there were a couple people who foresaw this coming, who thought, yeah, a dragon's going to die. Like, not only that, it's going to become an ice dragon, blah, blah, blah. I just didn't want to believe it. Like, I shut my ears to it. And then when it happened, I was angry. I was like really, really mad. And I think it's just because this fantasy world, it doesn't work without the dragons. And unless there's some eggs somewhere, this is like it. So I'd really like it if we could get some dragons going, you know, just until the end. If Drogon can be the one that survives, that'd be okay too.
Yeah. Definitely. So what's the story with the eggs? So are there male and female dragons, or are they kind of like they just do their own thing and eggs just happen, or how does that work?
So I read somewhere that they are asexual.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how Drogon produces an egg, because he just looks like he's made of testosterone. Much like Drogo.
Yeah.
But maybe Rhaegal could make some eggs. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. I think that would be quite a cool kind of, you know, shot towards the very end of the series, where you don't even need to see what happens next, but just to know that there are more eggs would be very cool.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that there were eggs to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Viserion's death was hard. It's still hard. I still hate seeing Viserion as an ice dragon. I hope that there's like a Thanos time stone or something, and we can like reverse it back and get Viserion back. That'd be nice.
I was trying to figure out ways of like, okay, if the one that turns you, so you know how the whites, if you kill the one that turned them, they'll crumble. Maybe if it's a different kind of being, this is me trying to justify it in my head. Maybe if it's a different kind of being that killing the person that turned them revives them, and they come back, like John came back, or like someone else. I was like, how can we get Viserion back and not be
I love second? That you're trying to bargain with this. That's yeah. The greatest.
I'm in the bargaining phase of my dragon grief.
Well, you know, it means that you've left denial, so yeah, good job.
I'm on the path. Yeah,
you're on the path to acceptance. You're going to get there eventually, yeah. I promise.
Just wait.
I'm not there yet.
No, it's next week when I'm going to get angry.
Right. You're going to be like, fuck you, Night King.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number one, it's basically, it's not about the episode. It's actually about the fan reaction to the episode.
Ah.
I've seen a lot of articles about this episode was disrespectful to the rules of fantasy.
Ah.
And I was wondering if you felt that way at all because of the speed of dragons or the speed of ravens, or people said that if magic A equals magic A, then you can't break that fantasy rule. If you've set it up in fantasy, then you can't break it. I know that you're a huge fantasy fan, so I just wanted to get your perspective on what you thought about that.
So were they talking mostly about how quickly the dragons got there and the ravens got there and things like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people's biggest problem was the ravens. You know, how long was everybody there? It seems like they were cutting corners for story's sake. Mm. You know, I remember even when this episode first aired, a lot of people were really upset about it. I didn't care. So I didn't see why it was such a big deal. But I did a lot of reading in the last couple of days. This was a huge deal.
Wow. Yeah. It came up. So my husband and I watched this together and we saw it and we went, wow, they got there fast. And we kind of, you know, touched on it like, well, how far away was it? Oh, yeah, that's fine. There's two sort of parts to it, I guess. How long were they walking first to get to where they got to on that frozen lake? And therefore, how long would it have taken Gendry to run back? I don't have a problem with that at all. They were very clever with the use of sort of day and night. They never showed them sleeping overnight before they got to the lake. It could have just been one day. If they trudged there and, you know, one day or half a day. It could have been half a day. They could have been walking for 4 hours and he could have run back in an hour. I don't have a problem with that. That could be quite a short time. And I think they were clever with how they showed that. So the issue really is how long does it take a raven to get from Castle Black down to Dragonstone, which I guess they've talked before. It's Dragonstone's not that much further north than King's Landing. So they often talk about 1,000 miles, don't they? They talk about the north being 1,000 miles from King's Landing. About that?
So I have a map.
Cool.
I have a map. It's on my wall in my office, and there's actually like a scale of how, you know, how many miles is how many inches. And we did the miles to inches on my map, and it's about 1,500 miles. And if dragons are 747, even if you go half the speed of a plane, you're there in like 10 hours, maybe less.
Yeah. So the issue is the raven. Like, really, if people are going to nitpick it, a raven can't fly that fast. And a raven to get from there to Dragonstone is pushing it to think that could happen in less than a day, I guess. Right?
Yeah. So I would counter with this, and it's weak. I realize it's weak, but maybe this is just how I wrap my head around it. I'm not sure. But Daenerys never said whether or not she got a raven. She just said that she didn't want to do nothing. She was pissed at Tyrion because she did nothing and lost all of her allies. And her one remaining ally, who she's now, you know, probably in love with, just went off on a white hunt to help, you know, further his mission. And this is a possible ally for her. So it's possible to me that she just decided on her own, I'm going to go.
Yeah,
I'm going to go and I'm going to go help them. And maybe the raven is insignificant.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it works. I'm not bothered by it. I think there's going to always be people who have issues with timelines and issues with things like that. You have to just relax into it, I think, and realize that it's a story and go with the story. And unless it's something that's completely implausible and just stupid, you just have to go with it. I was okay with it. like I said, we noticed it, we mentioned it. And I think it's just contrast too. I think they spent a lot of the first few seasons, things took forever. Things were really slow. And then suddenly, I know this is a general comment, is that things do tend to speed up in this last couple of seasons, that things happen a lot more quickly. They talk about it and then they're suddenly there. I just think that's part of the pacing, making it more exciting, ramping up towards the end of it and the climax of the story. So I wasn't overly bothered by that. I think it just made a good story. And, oh, my God, how else were they going to get out of that? They needed the dragon.
I know. It was, I mean, John was right. He said Daenerys is our only chance.
Yeah. And, you know, she had her special, like, fluffy white winter dress that she went to put on. I think that was a good touch. You know, she's going to the snows. She's wearing, it's
that
like,
jacket is yeah, everything.
It's like Princess Leia wearing her Hoth outfit. You know, when you're in the snow and ice, you've got to wear the right costume. And it was just amazing. She looked so great. It was cool.
If you go to the wiki, there is a lot of side-by-side comparison and parallels to this episode with Lord of the Rings and Star Wars.
Oh, cool. I have to check that out. Yeah.
And one of them is, a lot of them are from Hoth, but one of them from Lord of the Rings was the way that the Night's King reanimated Viserion was a lot like something that I haven't seen The Hobbit, but it was something about Smaug.
So there's there's no reanimation or anything, but there is a good couple of shots of Smaug where you just see his eye, and then you just see the eye open and it's red. So he's sort of hiding in the treasure, and you just see this mountain of treasure and this little sort of eye poking out that's closed, and then it opens in exactly the same way, but it's sort of red and orange and fiery. But it's that, you know, often you see this in the TV show with any kind of character, dragon or not, where their eye opens and it's like, dun, you know, like all of a sudden, like, and it was like that. It was pretty much like that. That's cool. I have to look that up. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's in the notes in the trivia part of the episode page for Game of Thrones. So you have to search Beyond the Wall in parentheses episode.
Cool.
Because apparently... Okay. Beyond the Wall is actually another page in itself, just of the area.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'll check it out. Yeah,
there's a lot of side by side. So, okay. Well, that was kind of my reaction. I didn't know. I know that there's a lot. Look, with any like fandom that has crazy fans, like Game of Thrones, Star Wars, probably Lord of the Rings, Walking Dead, you, for some reason, people have attached hating the show while being a fan. I think it's at its worst with Star Wars.
So it's cool to like one set of episodes and not another set, or you know, it's like music, isn't it? I liked them before they were famous or before they were cool. It's like the thing to be disparaging about it while you still like it. And it's fun sometimes. I've done that with The Walking Dead, I can tell you for sure. A few of the seasons in the middle there. But
Season 7, episode 1,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, pretty much. Anything with Negan, hey, you and I are on the same page there.
Yeah, good.
But, I think I can see why people do it. It's fun to talk about, but you can only take it so far. You know, you like the show, watch it, enjoy it. It's just TV. Just get over it.
Well, and it's not anything that's set to real life. I mean, we're talking about a show with dragons. We're talking about a show with, you know, a woman who can't be burned in fire and a guy that was reanimated from a stab wound, you know. Yeah. But it's just, to me, if it's fantasy, if it's a comic book, if it's so clearly not real life, I have an easier time unlocking my brain and just kind of letting events happen. The only problem I have with this episode is that Benjen could get on the horse.
Yeah.
Okay, Benjen could get on the horse because I know that a person can get on a horse and ride away in the time that it takes to talk about getting on the horse and riding away.
Yeah, see if there's time before taking the time to say there's no time.
Right. So do you have any notes?
Just a couple. So one was just about Tyrion and Dany. I love him as her hand. He calls her out on things, and he's honest, but he offers amazing advice and counsel. And I think their relationship is really great because he makes her uncomfortable, but she needs it, and she knows that she needs it. So I think she values him hugely for that. And all the time that's happening, you know, he'll sort of push and push, and you think that we as an audience, and probably both of them, are thinking, oh, has he gone too far? And then she goes, yeah, I kind of needed that. And I love that. It's a really great dynamic, great writing and great acting from the two of them. The other note I've got is about our dear friend Steve Brown. And I'm sure we'll have a voicemail coming up from him, but I just keep thinking, oh my goodness, coming to the end of this season and Steve's going to be catching up to all of us. And then I had this epiphany yesterday and I went, no, he's not catching up to us. We're going to all become Steve. We're going to become fresh. We're going to be, after next episode, you know, I know he's already watched it, we're all on the same page and we're all watching fresh and we're all brand new. And I just love it. I'm so excited by that. It's really cool. So we're with you now, Steve.
We should create a hashtag that says we are Steve.
That's so cool.
Hashtag we are Steve. Start doing it, everybody. It's going to be a thing.
It's a thing. It's a thing now. We said it.
Yeah. We put it out into the ether. Let's see what happens with it. Yeah. I think I've talked about really everything that I wanted to talk about. The only thing that I didn't say was about John and Beric's conversation when John said, I am the shield that guards the realms of men. There was something in his eye that I really liked where it seems to me that he looked like he was happy that even though he's left the Night's Watch, he still gets to honor his vows.
Yeah, yeah.
With what the mission that has been placed in front of him. And I think that's... For somebody that's so filled with honor and truth, I think that that's really wonderful that he gets to carry that on.
Yeah, I love it. I have actually thought of another note that it was going to be one of my points, but there was just way too much else to talk about. But I don't think we can close out without talking about the zombie freaking polar bear, because that was so cool. Yeah. just a little honorable mention at the end here, because that was amazing. It was short and sharp and really well done. And, you know, doing a bit of background reading and knowing that the creators had wanted to do this for years but didn't have the budget, and now suddenly they're allowed to do it. It was pretty amazing. It was really cool. I liked that that whole sequence. And I liked that it was short, not a big deal compared to what happens later. But it was pretty amazing.
When that bear grabbed Thoros by the stomach, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's gone.
And it just kept going, and he's just like, and it just kept on going, and oh, it's horrible. Yeah, I'm surprised he lasted as long as he did after that, actually, but he had to have some meaningful words, I guess.
I couldn't believe he was upright.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, they're not dragging him?
Yeah.
It's like, I just got
bit by a dead bear.
I love Thoros, so I'm going to miss him.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so we are going to take a little break and we will be back with our worst ending and Dragon's Breath. Stay with us.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take.
And we're back. So we do have a couple of worst ending submissions this week. So I'm going to read off a couple of them with Anwen. Allie Adams, she says, my worst ending would be for Dany to be on the throne. The more I rewatch, the more she makes me crazy.
Allie, not such a popular opinion. I love that you're brave enough to say it out there.
Yes, very much so.
That's cool. Dave Halberg says, I believe the worst possible ending would be Cersei making a deal with the Night King, surrendering King's Landing, and becoming the first female White Walker. The series ends with Cersei and her new beau ruling over an icy wasteland. I'm sure Qyburn would figure out a way to become a walker as well. He's a survivor.
Jeff Allen says, my worst possible ending starts in episode 1 when the Golden Company attacks Jon's ship. Rhaegal is killed and Drogon flies off. The main characters wash up near Braavos with basically nothing. The next 4 episodes go on with no appearance of Jon or Dany. The Night King takes the entire the entire North. Cersei, now unopposed, takes everything below the neck. In the end, neither can get past the twins without a fray to let them through, so a truce is called. The series ends with the shot of Jon and Dany standing in a rowboat while Gendry rows them back to Westeros. Fade to black.
That's so depressing, but, you know, Jon and Dany are still alive. It's not too bad.
Not too bad. Maybe they have their babies.
Yeah, they just go off and, I don't know, start a commune somewhere.
Perfect. Yeah, they could just go. They can go to Braavos or something. I hear Marina's nice this time of year. Okay, so now we have some dragon's breath.
Alex Baelish says, "Oh, what an episode! What I love about Game of Thrones is how they make full-length feature films. The battle was amazing. One thing though, does Jon Snow needs to learn better military tactics? All he does is get surrounded by his enemies, or maybe he just likes to be saved." Seeing the great beast fall from the sky still gives me a gasp and causes more questions now that the Night King resurrected him. What will happen? Last thing were the colours. The ice was so cold and the fire was so warm on the screen.
Karen Farr says, what do you think Daenerys is thinking when she sees Jon's stabbing scars? Do you think Dany will name Jon her successor if she dies and Jon survives the Great War? Can't wait to hear the pod.
Yeah, good point. I think when she saw the scars, she was just as equally horrified by the scars and impressed by his washboard abs, because it was quite a serious sort of well-lit shot there. I don't know.
Beautiful shot.
It was very well
good
done.
Cinematography,
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, you had to watch it a few times just to make sure, right?
Right, just to count all six of them.
Yeah. Karen, I think that's a really interesting point. If Jon could be named successor, you know, if she has a chance to do that before she dies, if she does die, or, you know, if it's revealed that she's pregnant, would, you know, Jon's heir become the successor? I don't know. There's so many options there. Eh? It's going to be amazing to see.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Aim for the Head podcast says, the banter as they're walking was some of the best stuff the entire series. I also love seeing Sandor's fear every time he's near any kind of flame. He's one of my favorite characters.
Gary Meineke says, stop whinging. Okay, it's whinging.
Whinging. Yeah, so you guys don't say whinging in the States, right?
No. I've never heard that word before. And I thought that it was a made-up word until before we started recording, you were telling me that it was a word.
Yeah, it's really quite a British thing, and I guess that transfers over to here in New Zealand as well, whinging. It's the same as whining, really. It's just like whining, but it's maybe, I don't know, less high-pitched. It's like man
yeah,
whining.
I'm going to start using that now. I'm going to tell my kids to stop whinging.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't sure, Gary, if you meant stop whinging or if you mean stop winching, because when you said winching I thought, oh, do you mean when they're kind of dragging using the chains to drag Viserion out of the water? I thought maybe stop winching, leave him down there, but I'm pretty sure you meant whinging, but anyway, write in and let us know. Maybe it's a new word for you as well.
Yes, I like it. Whingy winching, winching whinging, I don't know, it's all good.
Ali Adams says, Kristen, I know this isn't your favorite episode, but I wanted to share with you something that I love about it. Every summer I go on a very long hike with a group of women that I know. One of my favorite things about it is the random conversations that I had as the hiking order naturally changes. I loved watching the different pairs and groups talk as they journeyed. Some had painful history, some were strangers, but they all came together for the greater good. My personal favorite was Jorah and John. I loved it.
Yeah, you were talking about that too.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you know what? I miss the talk and walk. I got to do more of that.
Yeah. Come to New Zealand. There's lots of good walking tracks here.
Yay. Okay. Lindsay Schlicht says, hello, Kristen and Anwen of the beautiful accent and amazing name.
Oh, Lindsay.
She's wonderful. Well, I've been actually avoiding this episode for 2 weeks. Even though it's not as tragic as the Red Wedding, it still induces the same level of dread, and I've never rewatched it. The things we do for the podcast. I appreciate it, Lindsay. So if Arya and Sansa have been plotting against Littlefinger since they all first met in the Weirwood, I don't understand any of their interactions in this episode. This scene where Arya accuses Sansa of helping the Lannisters kill Ned, Sansa sending Brienne away. The creepy scene in Arya's bedroom where she threatens Sansa. If this is all an act for Littlefinger, then why aren't we seeing him witness any of it? It all feels like this is really going on between them and not an act. None of this makes any sense to me, and I think this is the episode that really starts to drive me nuts with this storyline. Poor Gendry. If he's not rowing, he's running. I knew we wouldn't lose Jon here, but I felt like the show missed an opportunity, an amazing opportunity. I thought for sure Rhaegal would land and pick Jon up, revealing to everyone who Jon was. Instead, we kill Benjen for no reason. Two could have fit on that horse. That's what I'm saying. It was the ending of Titanic all over again. Lindsay, you're my homegirl, man. There was room on the door for Rose.
Yeah.
I can't. I totally agree.
Never let go, Jack.
I'll never let go. Bitch, I had room on that door. I can't even talk about Viserion. I'm too hurt. One more to go. Ah!
That's so awesome, Lindsay. Yeah, I guess we talked a little bit there, well, quite a lot about Arya and Sansa and their conversations. And yeah, maybe, I know you don't really like rewatching this episode, but maybe watching it a few times, I don't know. I don't know that I got much more clarity by watching it again, but it's really interesting how, yeah.
Takes the sting out a little bit.
Yeah, but going back to Rhaegal picking Jon up, like, it's kind of a bit like Lord of the Rings with the whole, why didn't the Eagles just drop the ring into Mount Doom in the first place? When you can see that they can come and pick anybody up anytime they like. So, mm-hmm. You know, Jon says, go, go. Like, why couldn't he have taken off and then just grabbed him with his claws? Like, can these dragons, we've seen these dragons pick up human beings, right? Usually like marine soldiers to throw them to their death, but he could have taken off, grabbed him, picked him up and gone with it. But yeah, that's just picking again, I guess, from my perspective.
Yeah. Well, they were all waiting for him. Like, if he had just gotten on Drogon immediately, yeah. Maybe Viserion would still be alive.
Yeah.
You never know.
John.
John, you messed up, man. Okay, so we have quite a bit of voicemails this week, and I gotta tell you, I wanted to play them all. So I hope that everybody's okay with it, because I am really excited that we have four voicemails.
Yeah.
The first voicemail that we have is from Gwen Figueroa.
Hi, it's Gwen, calling in with some feedback. I wanted to start with Arya and Sansa and Littlefinger and all that. So in the previous episode, when I first saw it, that I was seeing it the way they wanted us to see it. That Littlefinger had the upper hand, that he was, you know, catching Arya and knew what she was doing. But watching it again and knowing the outcome, I can totally see how Arya was completely playing him. And I mean, she was just standing there. She could obviously be seen. But I liked how they did that in a way where it could go either way. The only thing that kind of set me back on that was a conversation that Arya and Sansa had. But I'm sure there was more to that conversation. I think this was just the beginning of their understanding of each other. And I'm sure they spoke more, because obviously the outcome shows that they did. But I liked how they did that. And Tormund, he's amazing. He's so funny. And, you know, he's saying that he's going to end up with Brienne. And I believe it. I believe him, because he is very determined. And he wins. And he's a great fighter. And I hope that Clegane gets over this fear of fire. I'm not sure how it's going to happen, but I really hope he gets over it and that we see that, because I was really bummed out that Thoros, you know, was a victim because of his fear of fire. I mean, I didn't get to say anything about the Loot Train episode, but that's like one of my favorites. And basically anytime Dany says Dracarys is like amazing. But that was so wonderful. And I just can't believe we're only a couple of episodes away, and I'm so excited. And I'm right along there with you, Kristen, when it comes to spoilers. I'm avoiding everything like the plague. I'm glad that you warn us when they're going to talk about whatever. I fast forward, and I even avoid movie previews, especially Marvel. But anyway, I'm so excited for the rest of what's to come, and thanks so much. Have a great one. Bye.
Oh, Gwen, thank you so much. That was lovely.
That's great.
She's adorable. Adorable. Call in anytime. The next voicemail that we have is from Gemma Hall.
Hi, Kristen and guest host. This is Gemma calling from South Wales. This is my first time calling in to your podcast because I normally write in my feedback and I'm trying to be brave. Okay, so Beyond the Wall is like one of my favourite Game of Thrones episodes. I love anything to do with the Whites and the White Walkers specifically, and when they go beyond the wall, it's just great for me, like, because I'm a massive Walking Dead fan, so anything with zombies is great. So that episode is just, oh, I know there's some really big moments, you know, the polar bear jumps out and that's great, and then losing one of the dragons as well is so sad. But one of my favourite moments is just a short scene between Tormund and the Hound, and the dialogue in regards to Brianna Tarth is just hysterical. I laugh every time I watch it. Tormund says, "I have a beauty waiting for me back at Winterfell if I ever get back there. Yellow hair, blue eyes, tallest woman you've ever seen, almost as tall as you." And Hound says, "Brianna Tarth? You know her? You're with Brianna of effing Tarth. Well, not with her yet, but I see the way she looks at me. How does she look at you? Like she wants to carve you up and eat your liver? You do know her." And I just, sorry, that's my reading of the dialogue. This is hysterical. I love it. Anyway, that's my feedback from the episode. It's one, again, it's one of my favourites and I love it. So nice to talk to you guys, and look forward to the podcast. Bye.
Oh, Gemma, she's so awesome. I've always been a fan of Gemma's feedback on a few of the different podcasts that I listen to, and I love that she's now started leaving voicemails because her accent is amazing. Gemma, you have to keep calling because I love your Welsh accent. And actually, next time, just as a favour to me, can you please let me know if you know any other Anwyns, because it's a Welsh name and I've never met a single other Anwyn, and apparently there's quite a few over there. So let me know if you know any.
Oh, yay. You know what? I'm so glad that she was brave. That was, I know that that can be really, really unnerving to do your very first voicemail for a podcast. And I'm just, I think you were brilliant. So thank you so much for your feedback. And we both have huge smiles on our face right now. So you can't see us, but I can see Anwyn. She can see me. And we're both smiling ear to ear right now. So.
Yay, Gemma.
Yay. That was awesome. And our next voicemail is from Archmaester Rennie.
Greetings, Kristen and guest host. I'm really looking forward to hearing your podcast on this crossover episode between Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead. Kristen, I hope you manage to do this podcast through your tears. I know how you feel about the death of Viserion.
I know.
So, what I wanted to comment on is that opening shot of the camera traveling over the map table north toward the wall with the fire burning in the fireplace just beyond the table, making it look like there's a big fire beyond the wall. And that shot, in a way, encapsulates the entire episode. It recapitulates what Daenerys is going to do. She's going to fly north with the dragons, the way the camera flies over the table, and then the dragons are going to bring fire beyond the wall and do some devastation to the army of Whites. So I just thought that was a beautiful way to open the episode with that one metafictional, very symbolic shot that really tells us what's coming in the rest of the episode. The first time you see the episode, you wouldn't necessarily know that, so it would just be a cool shot, but it really rewards a rewatch when you know what's coming with the dragons going over the wall, and then you sort of see it enacted in the model in that opening shot. So, holy cow, one more episode to go. Wow, and then the rewatch will be ended and season 8 will begin.
She's amazing. Oh my god.
She's incredible.
She's truly the Archmeister. Like anything that we can think of, she thinks like next level. That's amazing.
So like, cool. We were both like, yeah, I really like that. That was amazing.
There was some fire and there was some ice. Ha ha ha. It's so representative. And then she's like, okay, mind blown.
Yeah. Both of us just looked at each other and we're both like, what?
Yeah.
That was amazing.
The actual fire beyond the actual wall. And oh, that's so cool. Rennie, you're
and
awesome.
And the flying over and everything. That, you know, Rennie, I love you. Fucking love you. Oh, I'm so happy that she calls in every week. And then our last voicemail. I know that Steve had a lot of trouble with this recording. I think this episode hit him a little hard. So I think we all think about you week to week, Steve. I'm not going to lie. I know I do when I watch these episodes. So, all right. So let's see what Steve had to say.
Hello, Kristen and guest host. This is Steve, and this is for Beyond the Wall. This is the one that I'm going to successfully get through because the last two times I tried to record this, I was a blubbering idiot. And I don't know exactly what it was that hit me so emotionally with this episode. I think it was the conversation that John and Beric have about serving God and not understanding what you're doing. But for me, it was more of that it hit the feels of just serving a country, this country or whatever in general. I like the line that Beric said. He said, I don't think it's our purpose to understand except one thing, we're soldiers. And then later he says, we have to know what we're fighting for. And when John asks him what, he says life. He says, we're fighting for life. And he says, we're fighting to defend those who can't defend themselves. So I think that's what really hit me very strongly and caused me not to be able to get through these voicemails earlier. And so a couple other notes. John may have to give up some of his pride. And I think we see that at the end of this episode when he calls Daenerys my queen. I don't like seeing Sansa and Arya at odds with each other. I don't like that Littlefinger was successful at putting a wedge between them, so I hope that that gets worked out. Tormund talking about Brienne with the Clegane was really good, and I'm glad he survived at least this battle to have that chance, that reunion. But of course, now she's on her way to King's Landing, so don't know what's going to happen there. Love the talk about heroics between Tyrion and Daenerys, because you know Tyrion has always been this man who's not he's not a coward, but he's also not a hero. So I like that. I like that Tyrion said that fear makes power brittle. And this was a big episode. There's a lot in this episode, so I'm gonna just wrap up with a couple of things. I loved seeing Clegane save Tormund there at the end. The dragons appearing was great, but you can see the scope of what they're facing as we had those overhead shots of all the whites walking. And then, of course, we have the ultimate scary thing, which is the blue-eyed dragon and seeing what's going to happen with him. There's a whole bunch of other stuff in this episode. But those are my few notes, and I can't wait to watch the next one. Talk to you later.
Steve. Where old Steve?
I love Steve. I am so excited to have him on next week.
Awesome. He's guesting next week. That's so cool.
Well, okay, that's our show. Anwen, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast. I look forward to it so much. And it's just great to see your face and hear your voice and talk about. It's just like we're just hanging out and talking about Game of Thrones. And then sometimes I remember, oh, yeah, we're being recorded and some people might listen.
I know. Sometimes I want to like go off on a tangent and talk about something completely different. And I've had to restrain myself twice that I can think of during this recording. And I'm like, no, stay on topic, Kristen.
You did it.
So the next episode we are covering is, I cannot believe I'm saying this, Season 7, Episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf. We have reached the end of this rewatch. Like I told you, joining me is fan favorite and host favorite, Steve Brown. Having just watched the entire series for the first time with fresh eyes, I can't wait to see what he has to say. He's been our first watcher.
It's amazing.
For the entire rewatch.
Yeah, so. He's been such a huge part of it. It's absolutely perfect that he's going to be hosting the last episode of the rewatch. So that's going to be so great.
Yep. Hashtag We Are Steve.
Woohoo!
So if you want to send in some feedback for that, you can do so in these ways.
If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us dragons@podcastica.com. We also have our webpage where you can submit feedback as well, housepodcastica.com.
You can check out our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com, like The Walking Dead cast, Strange Indeed, and We Have to Go Back, Lost Revisited. Special thanks to Break of Reality for our new intro music. If you want to check them out, you could do so on YouTube or on their website, breakofreality.com. Thanks to Kirk Manley for our podcast art and Ben Beck for website design. Kirk's work can be checked out on his website, studiokm.com. Ben Beck can be found at thenextlevelnetwork.com. Cersei.
The Mountain.
The Night King.
Euron Greyjoy.
Melisandre.
Bronn of the Blackwater.
Allie Adams.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.